Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here on Declare Your Independence. You know, I'm really excited about talking to our next guest, Jim Cantrell. Jim Cantrell, interesting history. I'm going to let him kind of get you up on his bio. But how I know Jim is he had Vector Launch was a rocket company in Tucson that we got to go down. And you know what you get to do? You have a right to keep and bear ICBMs. That's what you get to do. You know, he has a rocket. And the whole thing was to put up a small satellites. Well, you know, you go in and out and stuff happen. Well, he started SpaceX with Elon in the beginning. They went to Russia. He needed a rocket guy, which happened to be what? It happened to be the Jim, okay? So what we're going to do, we got to go down. Me and a friend, we went down to Tucson, toured the rocket assembly there, and he also built race cars, and he had, you know, a bunch of welders welding and doing and making and engine and nozzles and carbon fiber stuff. It was very educational, but we couldn't take pictures. Because that's a munitions violation if you go to jail. You took pictures of our right to keep and bear ICBMs. So what we're going to do is get updated on what he's doing now. There's a new project coming online that he's just in the beginnings of, and we get to hear everything about it. He's only got a little while, so we're going to get right to it. So Jim Cantrell, add whatever needs to be added to that. PhantomSpace.com. You guys go check it out. I'll show you the web page here a little bit while he's yakking it. But go ahead and tell us where you came from. You're a NASA guy. You know, I mean, I don't need to spend a whole bunch of time on every little old thing because I want to get to PhantomSpace.com. Jim, go, man.
Hey, good to be with you again, Ernie. Started out life, pretty meager kind of existence on a chicken ranch, and don't know how I ever expected to end up here, but here I am. But I managed to somehow get a couple of degrees in engineering at Utah State, and that landed me my first job at NASA with JPL down in Pasadena, working Mars missions, and invented something that the French and Soviet mission, this was the 80s when the Soviet Union was still around, for those of you old enough to remember. And they needed what I invented for a Mars balloon, and I ended up going to France and working with the Soviets and the French. And being a hardcore anti-communist, this was sort of a fascinating thing for me in my life to go actually face the bear firsthand. Learned Russian, so forth, and learned French, by the way, as well.
Learned Russian so, and so forth? You learned Russian? What to go work with them, to, you know, glean from them what they knew? Why?
Well, not at that stage. You know, it's just, it was, you know, I learned French there and found out I was okay with languages, and then everybody was taking Russian lessons, so I joined them, and I gradually learned it. And but the Russians had a revolution in 1991, and that kind of put a damper on things, and the program was starting to end because it was led by the Soviets, and So I came back to the U.S. I got recruited by the Defense Intelligence Agency to go back to Russia for about 6 or 7 years to help stop brain drain. There were all these missile scientists and nuclear weapons scientists who had very marketable skills that weren't being paid by the government. So our job was to make sure that they were paid by us so they didn't go to work for the Iranians and so forth. So part of what we did there was converted ICBMs to satellite launchers, and we got joint missile defense things going with the Russians. It's hard to believe in today's day and age that that's what we were doing back then, but that's what we did. And that led Elon Musk to call me out of the blue in 2001 looking for somebody to help him buy Russian rockets. And so I took Elon over there on a number of tours, and we figured out a Mars mission he wanted to do, a private Mars mission, and we wanted to try to buy the rockets from the Russians, and they wouldn't sell it to him because he was a 20-something kid, albeit with a lot of money. But the Russians saw him as not very serious. So as a result of that, he said, hey, let's start SpaceX. And so that's how SpaceX started. And it was all about Mars, still is about Mars. And, but they've done tremendous things, as you see all the time. So after a little while with Elon, I left, started a company called Strategic Space, where I got involved in a lot of space warfare stuff with the government. And then in about 2010, I just said I've had it with the government and started out into space startups. And so I helped a number of satellite companies get started. And most of them actually are very successful today. And Vector was one I started, which was to launch these satellites, because SpaceX, albeit it's provided a way to launch, it's not sufficient for the volumes that are happening. There's a literal explosion in small satellites that are happening now with funding that's private. So what we in essence did by starting SpaceX and launching this whole new industry is we stole the mantle of space exploration from nation states and gave it back to the people. So this revolution is continuing, and you will probably see SpaceX making its first steps on Mars probably within my lifetime. And it won't be a government that goes there. It'll be a private company, which I'm really, really proud of, having had a small part in that. So Vector didn't last. You mentioned, we were building and doing, and we were. And several of my co-founders were not keeping up with the pace of what we were promising the investors. And the big investors pulled out. And so I left before all the bad stuff happened. One of my co-founders took over and bankrupted the company. But in the meanwhile, I said, this idea is still a good one of mass manufacturing small launch vehicles so that we can launch by the hundreds a year and get the price down, so be the Henry Ford of space. And I will credit my wife Angela with encouraging me to, get out of the swimming pool after I had to lick my wounds and get back on the saddle. And that's exactly what we did with Phantom. So we started it in October of 19. And very quiet. We've been quiet ever since, hence the name, because it's my theory that if you're talking, you're not doing. And so we've been doing, and we've raised a bit of money, and pretty close to $100 million. And we took a different strategy than we had at Vector. We started with a clean slate, both from the business case and from the technology. So we started by looking at what things we buy and what things we build. And, for example, the engines that you were just showing, we buy those. There's a company in Colorado that makes them, and they do a really great job. We can afford them. So we can put together one of these launch vehicles for about $4 million, the smaller one called Daytona. And the Daytona is about a year away from launch, and we've done a lot of testing with it already. We went out in last November into the New Mexico desert and did a hot fire test of one of the stages. Ran it through its paces as if it were flying to space. So that was a pretty big milestone. We've got the flight vehicle coming together in our factory in Tucson. And
is it the same place?
No, different place. The last one started out as my car shop, right? Mm-hmm. And this one we found an industrial facility at the right place and right time that was available. And so it's about 50,000 square feet. Yeah, it's enough that we think we can make about 100 a year out of this facility itself. So we've got, you know, robotic welders in there, and we've got clean rooms, and, you know, we also build satellites. So we start off with a, you know, 19 with a satellite contract, which we delivered the satellite about a year ago. And we've got two other satellites under contract right now. We've also had a lot of success in selling the rockets. NASA gave us a $300 million contract for launch services for small satellites, and we've won four launches on that contract. And we have 23 commercial satellite contracts for launch as well.
All right, when are the contracts to be fulfilled?
Well, so there's so much demand on this. If you go to SpaceX, you have to wait 3 years for a launch. So people are literally battling over our first launches, which we think will be about the end of next year. And we're going to do four launches in 25, and then we're going to do about 15 launches in 26. And we have three launch sites that we've put together. We have a dedicated launch site at Vandenberg Air Force Base on the West Coast. And we'll put two pads in there. It's an old NASA scout site that's been abandoned. And we got regulatory approval for 60 launches a year out of there. SpaceX has 12 a year approved. So we're moving forward on that. They also, the 45th Space Wing out on Cape Canaveral gave us SpaceX's landing pad. So we take control of those next year. Those are the ones where you see the SpaceX boosters landing at the Cape Canaveral site. So those will be our future launch site. And then the big one for us is in the Bahamas. We worked a drug deal, so to speak, with the Bahama government to launch off of one of their northern islands. And
hell yeah, get the heck out of the, they're freaking telling you what you can't, you know, and that was you, wasn't it? That was Jim Fantrell. Get us out of the, that feels like some Jim. You know, that's one thing, you know, a lot of the people, I don't know how much you want, all right, I'm going to do it because I can do it. You know, Jim is openly anti-freaking regulatory, piss me off, delay, kind of coming from the background of, you know, in the government, NASA, whatever he knows. And he just has no love and is not shy about sharing it with people that he's not, you know, in with, you know, yes and boss and how high. You know, so this, going to the Bahamas as a launch facility, you know, I know that wasn't a hard sell for you, but, you know, for the Bahamas, what was their input on that ability?
Yeah, so it turns out we have an investor in Phantom that owns an island in the Bahamas, and he's I know.
Dr. Evil.
No, he's a hell of a nice guy, and his island used to have a NASA launch site for sounding rockets. And, you know, we were together at a dinner, and he started saying, hey, you know, maybe we can launch your rockets from my island. And so I had a look at it, you know, and I'm like, Carl, no, that won't work. And, you know, you got all your buildings and stuff. I said, but, you know, maybe some of the islands nearby. And he goes, yeah, there's this one for sale. So we started looking into it. The more we looked into it, the more it made sense. And it's about a three-hour boat ride from Cape Canaveral. And the northern part of the Bahamas are just really uninhabited. And so he knew very well the prime minister and is friendly with the parliament because he's a treasure hunter. And he's discovered sunken galleons out there and goes out and recovers them and splits the loot with the government. So he gave us an audience with the prime minister, and we sold the prime minister on this, and the parliament approved it. And so the idea is that...
No, wait, time out. When was this approved? It's done? The government said, yep, there it is, peace out? You know, when was this?
Yeah. About 6 months ago, I got the letter from the Bahamas, from the Prime Minister himself, right?
We have been talking, me and a close friend that, you know, follows space and everything, he's going, I don't know why the hell they're messing around with the U.S. Why are they, you know, Boca Chica, we got to have in the snail, dart, turtle, bird, something. There's always something. And, the FAA license of maybe we will, maybe we won't, kind of. So what kind of regulatory delays and stuff do you expect in the Bahamas?
Well, so we end up having, because we're a U.S. manufacturer, we end up having to work with the FAA, who's not bad, I will tell you. So coming from me, that's a compliment. You know, we're also having to deal with the fact that we are considered a weapons manufacturer. I mean, what we're basically making is an ICBM. So that's probably the tall pole in the tent that we have to get through, which is, you know, getting the government to allow us to temporarily export these to the Bahamas. But, you know, there are ways to do that, and the Bahamas is interested in this because it brings business to them, and
yeah,
it probably brings satellite manufacturing lines there, and we want to bring the Bahamas into the 21st century as a spacefaring nation, and they're very excited about
this.
Yeah,
I would imagine. Okay, let me ask some questions, because you're short on time, and I want to make sure I get this in. If you're going to the Bahamas, all right, and you need the facility, are you going to have factories there? Is it going to be in a barge? Are you going to have the, you know, the freaking Carnival cruise ship manufacturing platform? I mean, how are you going to do this?
So we'll manufacture initially the vehicles in the U.S. We have three pads on this one island we're looking at, and which is owned by the Bahama government. They'll lease it to us. So we will transport those around barges, and we'd have a, you know, small skeleton crew there, probably 10, 15 people is all, to facilitate the launches. We'll direct those launches from Tucson. We have a mission control center in Tucson that can remotely launch these things. And then over time, though, we're looking at having what we call a franchise manufacturing operation there, kind of like what Mercedes does with cars in the U.S. They send, you know, assemblies over, and then they're assembled finally in Alabama, and they're considered a U.S. car. So that's, you know, down the road, we'll plan on doing that. We're also planning on putting satellite manufacturing facilities in the Bahamas, you know, on some of the on the more major islands, as part of, you know, part of the drug deal, as I call it, that we did with the government. You know, they have to have a return, but it's so attractive from a launch perspective. You know, geographically, we're outside of the air lanes. So if you trace a line from Miami to Spain, that's really the bottom southern edge of your air lane traffic. And if you're flying out of Cape Canaveral, you're going through that all the time, and it pisses everybody off to break that down. So, if, you know, we've been thinking about how do you really fly 150, 350 a year. And this is what you need. You don't have ship traffic to deal with. You don't have air traffic, so it's the perfect place for it. So we're you know, we're happy.
Now, Cuba would be perfect if they weren't so communist. So
yeah. Now, the Bahama government's been very easy to work with, and you just have to think about it from their perspective. You know, about what is it these people need and want, and how do we accommodate that?
Well, what's the market? You know, this is exciting that you got that option. But, you know, for satellites to do what you're doing, because I was looking at one of your rockets here. Let me go and show the audience. You know, one of the rockets here was Laguna. I think it had, you know, it could go to the moon, payload to the moon.
Yeah, that's the second version. So that one will be both, you know, expendable, which can go to the moon, and then reusable, which will fly back the first stage.
Well, you're looking at small satellite. I mean, everything's getting smaller now. Yeah. Hell, they're, you know, orbiting with, you know, slingshots. But, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what is it that you're advocating putting up? What is the market for you that you're going to be dealing with?
Yeah, we're focusing on the under 500 kilograms or under roughly 1,000 pounds satellites. That's last year was half of the mass that went up worldwide was under 500 kilogram satellites. And then it was 95% by number of the satellites. And it's the fastest growing segment. And it's not well served by big rockets like the Falcon 9 because you have to pack them on like a bus. And you go to a common destination, everybody drops off. And it creates debris hazards. It's not where everybody necessarily wants to go. And we can do this actually cheaper than they can do that, as it turns out, because this is a very, very low-cost rocket. And so what we aim to do is to take 25% of that market, and that'll be a launch a day for us. So it's a fairly ambitious scope for us, but we think it's, you know, quite realistic.
Well, this was your advocacy since forever. I remember, you know, you're talking about this. We were doing shows before. Is that you're going? No, the future is, you know, these small rockets. I mean, small payloads and so on, because you're looking to have the future is going to be these small payloads, but that, I mean, we're getting right down to CubeSats. So 500 kilograms, I mean, you have 1,000 pounds, that's a boat ton of freaking CubeSats.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, the CubeSats, it's funny, the market got smaller and smaller, and then it got bigger in terms of the average size of the satellite. And so a lot of companies got caught with rockets that were too small. Astra's one of them, and they weren't very feasible in the market anymore. What people are looking for now is mostly satellites that are going to constitute a constellation, sort of like Starlink. Mm. And those are typically 200 kilos, and we can carry two of those apiece. Or some of the bigger ones like Amazon, you know, we're talking with them, and they're like a 400 kilogram satellite. So, you know, this is a perfect fit for what we're doing. And down the road, you know, with the bigger rocket, we can carry some of the bigger satellites which are out there. So it expands our market reach a little bit with these two rockets. And what we basically do is reuse the first stage on the Laguna, later, and, we can bring that about half.
Oh, you're doing reusable?
Yeah, on our second version, yeah. And then ultimately, our third rocket, which we don't have on the web, is called Sebring, which has a reusable second stage, so a flyback second stage from space.
Damn. It's a space plane. What was it Jim Cantrell from Phantom Space said? The third rocket that they don't even have on the web page is going to have a second stage recovery vehicle? Oh, space plane. Yeah, that's what he said. You know, we didn't get to delve into it. We were limited on time, but I definitely wanted to point that out. We have the first ship is going to be inexpensive to get things into orbit up to, what was it, 400 kilograms into the second one and being recoverable on the second ship. And then the third one is going to be second stage recoverable, a space plane. Interesting. Well, Freedom's Phoenix has been covering the space race since... Oh, the first Merlin one, Falcon 1 with the first Merlin engines were launching in the Pacific. And I remember the first three failed, always some little bolt or too much humidity, something, you know, rocket science is rocket science. But Falcon 9 came online, and man, it hasn't skipped a beat. Then they put three of them together, make Falcon Heavy, and Starship has 100 tons it can take to orbit. This is going to go really fast. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that Starship is not the final version. It's going to have twice the capacity, like 1,000 tons to orbit or to Mars. This is just, you know, the proof of concept going in to going to Mars. So we'll be keeping track of this for you guys, but you can go to freedomsphoenix.com and you go to Space Travel and Exploration category, and you can see the progression from the beginning. We'll be right back with more with Jim Cantrell from Phantom Space.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News update. There are signs prosecutors in Georgia may soon announce whether former President Trump will be indicted for his alleged efforts to overturn Georgia's 2020 election results. The Democratic Fulton County District Attorney has been investigating Trump and his allies for more than 2 years. Trump has denied any wrongdoing. The deadliest wildfire in modern U.S. history has claimed at least 96 lives. David, a resident of Lahaina, got in a vehicle with friends to flee, but the roads were gridlocked.
I ran out of the car and ran for my life. Ran down to the ocean. I was only a quarter mile from the ocean. And they stayed in their car. They three of my friends in one car and two dogs died.
Hawaii Governor Josh Green is warning that crews could find 10 to 20 people per day, probably until they finish. Gas prices are on the rise, inching toward the $4 mark across the country. According to AAA, the national average for regular unleaded hit $3.85. John Schaefer, USA News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network. We're finishing our conversation with Jim Cantrell from PhantomSpace.com. I've known Jim Cantrell for years and his involvement in the space race, which we've been covering for a long time. And we are getting to where everything that was promised to me, I was born in 61, graduated high school in 79. So that makes me 62. But what happened, as I was promised as a young man, keep in mind, in the early 60s, I lived in Central Florida, and it was all space race, all Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy, Kennedy Space Center, Saturn V launches, rocket burgers, and imagine you're 4 or 5 years old, and everything you see is rockety, and you look at the exhaust coming out like it was a, you know, turbines of speed thing on a car, and you go, that's just the exhaust pipe, those liars. But this has been what I grew up on and what we expected. God, in 67, 68, when Star Trek started, what was I, 7, 8 years old, first, second, third grade? We thought we were going to have talking computers. Of course, we're going to have artificial intelligence. Of course, we're going to have communicators. Of course, we're going to have tricorders. Of course, yeah, it's called a smartphone. Access to all information is available to us, correct information and not so correct information at the same time. So you got to use your brain. But you have a long time to evaluate different pieces of information, but you do it on what you see. and they, them, those, won't leave us alone, know that. It's all about general public opinion. And inspiration, fear, positive waves, negative waves, all that goes into it. Now, what I remember, we had the space shuttle. In the 70s, you had the space shuttle prototype that they were testing and dropping, you know, from 747s and glide tests and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm going, the Enterprise. Here we go. Then what happened? You had the space shuttle in the 70s. Then you had the space shuttle in the 80s. You had the space shuttle in the 90s. You had the space shuttle in the 2000s. Then it hit 2010. Finally, they retired it. But that was innovation on government. Decades and decades. You can say that. Decades and decades of the same spacecraft that was, are you kidding me? And it was to be reusable, bring the cost down, make space accessible, and the highest it went was low Earth orbit. So I was disappointed. I was always disappointed. And I wanted to make sure that when it finally broke out, which in my estimation it was always going to, so when we started seeing the private sector start getting involved, we're like, about freaking time. And there's going to be a lot of innovation has already happened. And if you haven't been paying attention, you know, hopefully this show will give you a little bit of insight into what's possible and what's coming. I think we'll do more of these shows, kind of give you an idea where we're going. The other issue that we're going to make sure we bring up is artificial intelligence. I don't think people understand how powerful this is and what it means for humanity and what it means for the future and your children and grandchildren and how it's going to be. It's going to have bad actors and good. It's going to be the printing press, impact. It's going to be the integrated circuit impact. It's going to be access to information online impact. It's going to be the impact of broadband and video on the internet and so on. Because I remember Freedom's Phoenix is the logo, is various different logos that we have. The original is the Phoenix bird coming from the ashes of Lady Liberty's torch. That is the official Freedom's Phoenix logo. The reason was, back in the mid-90s, 96 or so, we had this concept in our mind that when broadband hit the internet, when video hit the internet, we were launching Freedom's Phoenix. So that took, like 9 years later. So we knew what was coming, and of course we got criticism. Broadband, video hitting the internet, you dumb kid, that'll never happen. You'll never, never, never. I can't keep track of how many times I told never stuff's going to happen to happen. But the having video capability in the hands of the people was like giving people a printing press, giving people a fax machine, giving people access to the internet via group chats, bulletin boards, being able to communicate with anyone on the planet instantaneously. Then you had the ability to send value, to send money, to do cryptocurrency. All of these things, stuff that has been talked about a long time ago. I remember in 1988, I think it was about 1988, there was an article written from Crossbows to Cryptography. And what it was about was, of course, the king limited access to crossbows to the peasants, because then they could just pull the crossbow out from the straw in their ox cart and, boom, bolt goes through the chest of the armed knight and go back to plowing. No, can't have that. You're not able to defend against the king's men. Well, AI, the internet, encryption, all this is kind of the same thing. They want to have monopoly of that technology, and if they can't have a monopoly on it, they want to have control and regulations of it. So this has been the trend since forever, from crossbows to cryptography. You read that, and you can see where our mindset was, even in the early days, in the early 30s, reading this stuff, and we'd publish it in our newspapers that we had at the time and everything, so people could understand why we understand. See, my thing is I don't want to I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I'm just trying to make sure you understand why I'm so convinced. This is the data points. This is the observations. These are the tech. These are the people. These are the things, the circumstances around the world that will create what we're thinking is going to happen. And are you prepared for it? And what is preparation? To recognize when it's being used against your freedom, your individual rights, your best interests. It's not because they, them, those, they're not doing it for you. You know, they may say they are, but liars. So we want to make sure that you have this understanding. Now, over the next week or two, I'm going to have some artificial intelligence guests come on and explain, you know, why we should be concerned and why we need to be diligent and why we need to have a little higher understanding of what's going on and how to use these tools for an expansion of our own individual freedom. I don't have a problem with artificial intelligence as long as it's mine. I want Jarvis, like Tony Stark in, you know, the Avengers, I want Jarvis, my own intelligence that belongs to me, that I create, make it, do whatever, and we be buds, not Alexa. Not to where it's surveilling everything that I do and creating whatever it is to influence me, because that is what the problem is. And it's one of the things that, you know, a lot of warning us of what's happening with artificial intelligence. Like, I remember Elon Musk saying, you know, the threat with artificial intelligence is how convincing it can be. It's going to convince you of whatever it wants you to think, what it wants you to do, what you think should be important, what to be afraid of, what to support. And it's going to have a convincing argument for every single individual. You'll have your own operating system that will be there to convince you. Watch the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix and the voice of the computer, the operating system, became his girlfriend, Scarlett Johansson. I mean, she sounds good just by voice. Now, you watch that and you kind of get an idea just how susceptible we are to this. There's plenty of Black Mirror episodes and Twilight Zones and all kinds of dystopian books that have been written decades and decades ago, hell, a century ago. So this is not anything new. People have been thinking about this stuff for a long time. And one of those have been, a lot of times, libertarians. We think in terms of principle. We think in terms of what's a seed to where this is going to benefit us or them. So that's why we focus on this stuff. And hopefully you get a little bit of understanding of the future that's coming and how we can benefit from it. But there's also things to worry about. And for those of you that have a great deal of interest in the future, go to freedomsphoenix.com. Near the top right of the page, you'll see a search engine bar in there. You can anything. Space travel exploration, artificial intelligence, energy innovations, anything. Now, on the orange navigation bar that goes across the top, near the top, you'll see more news and archives. The second selection across that bar, and archives, which is, you know, archives, but anarchist archives. But you go into there and you'll see a drop down that goes contents by subject. Go look at the subjects that are available: energy, space travel, exploration, artificial intelligence, robots, all kinds of stuff. And it's 600,000 articles over the past 17 years that we've done. Enjoy. More with Jim Cantrell right now. Well, you know, a disposable rocket, was it Daytona or whatever it was, the first one that you got?
Daytona.
That is, if it's going to be expendable, how much does it cost to make it? I mean, I saw, what was it, $4 million a launch? I mean, what are you extruding them out of an extruder with aluminum or something? I mean, how are you making them?
No, our first rocket cost less than $4 million, our very first one. And it has 9 engines on the first stage. We have a upgrade to a single engine, a bigger single engine later. That saves us $1.5 million on the cost. So we think we can get to roughly 50% profit margins, gross profit margins on these rockets at a price that beats SpaceX. So you know, how do we do it? Well, the engines are fairly inexpensive from the supplier. I have 10 of them sitting on my floor at the shop, and in fact, they're on a prototype rocket right now. So we got something that looks like a rocket sitting there with 9 of these engines. So that stuff's all real, and they've been qualified. The tanks themselves are aluminum. Rather than the last time we were doing this, we had composites, and that was due to some of the way the engines were built. We had to have composite tanks. This way, simple aluminum tanks. We have a robotic welder. We can crank a single tank out in about 3 days, and we think we can get that down to like about 3 hours, you know, when we get sufficient experience with it. And it just doesn't cost that much money in the material. And then, like the avionics and software, we licensed from NASA for $20,000. They had a program that didn't ever fly, and they were looking to license all that intellectual property out, so we bought it. And we used that. So that's some of the reason we saved so much money. We've gotten to this point in the development for about $30 million, and that's 10 to 50 times less than all of our peers in the business, and it shocks people when they hear it. We're only 28 people, Ernie, and but we're the right 28 people.
Yeah, it does take more. I tell you this, one of my sons he's head whippy dippy operations man, whatever, of a company that makes the robots that makes the silicon chips for Intel. Okay, so big fact, they can't make enough. They can't make, and he warned them a couple of years ago. He's going, look, man, your sales force is selling stuff we can't make. I mean, yeah, you're taking in the commissions, but who's going to make it? I mean, the world was short. So he goes, you got it. So finally, they just let him. He's, you know, like your son, he's a genius guy. So he just goes in, designed the entire factory south of South Mountain there, you know, south of Phoenix. And I stopped by there just a couple of weeks ago as a six-hour layover coming from Washington to Maine. And he gave me a tour of the factory. He just started putting all the robots in. All the raw material goes in these cages like thing, and it goes in like a, you know, a four-story Pez dispenser, and it comes out and it's just laser cut, dude, cut, boom, 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 done. And I go, you have that kind of assembly line making a, you know, a rocket a day. I mean, I'm just going, holy crap, the robots and the automation is there.
Yep, that's it. It's there, and it's not that expensive. And we don't think, at least to get to maybe 100 a year, we don't even need robotics. I mean, our welding is robotic, and they're much better than hand welders. But, you know, that is sort of the beginning of the whole process. And, you know, with time, we'll get better at it, and we'll get the processes down. And it's not that hard to make these things. There's no new technology that needs to be developed. The mentality has to change, and the mentality has to change from, gee whiz, look at this cool thing called a rocket, to this is like an airplane. So
yeah, it's a great silo. I mean, how hard is this? You know, I want to add this one thing. I apologize. I want to add this one thing. He had a frame. It was complicated. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It took three guys 2 days to make that the robot does in 45 minutes. That's
right,
the difference.
Exactly. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. Well, I mean, our future as humans is not to be laborers necessarily, even though many of us, myself included, enjoy the labor, right? We're not efficient at it. Machines are much more efficient at it. So, you know, I find these futuristic movies, you know, the talking about the robots taking over to be more realistic, I think, than most people think. People worry about AI taking over. Yeah, I think we've got a robotic future in front of us.
Hey, I just want to be able to own the robot and have it go work for me.
Right. Well,
build my rocket.
Think about where we've come in 100 years, Ernie. You know, I mean, the amount of tools and labor-saving devices, machines and that we have, it's amazing, right? And this was an era before us that where our forefathers and grandfathers used, you know, horses and mules to plow the fields. And,
you know, okay, before you go, I know you're tight on time, but I want you to, you know, inspire us. What is the future in just a few years in your industry? I mean, it's going to be, you know, all of a sudden I'm going to be, you know, me and my wife get on the top and go for a quick ride of whatever the hell. I mean, what are we looking at? Are you going to be able to send people, you know, capsules and people go to stations? I mean, you're looking at landing on what? I mean, give me, you know, what you really legitimately think is likely.
So the analogy I use, Ernie, it's a good question, is if you were 500 years ago standing on the shores of Spain, you'd watch the Spanish galleons take off, and you wouldn't necessarily know what the hell they were doing, but they'd come back loaded with gold, right? And 500 years ago, nobody, absolutely nobody that existed then would have an idea of what the new world would be today. And I'm sitting here in northern Utah in what was the Wild West, right? And I'm surrounded by billions of dollars of homes already, and nobody imagined what this is. Space is the same thing. We're not smart enough to know what it will be in 500 years. I can tell you, though, in the near term, probably in my lifetime, what you're going to see is you know, the satellite industry is the real deal. It's already $450 billion a year industry. That's bigger than the automotive industry, by the way. And about two-thirds of that is the application side. So, you know, you're getting satellite radio, you're getting TV, you're getting communications you don't even know go through space. And that's the majority of the money that's being spent in space. That will continue to grow. It will be probably within 10 years, $2 trillion or more in revenue. So it'll be one of the major dominant industries in the world. And the U.S. is the leader in that. So this is the good news for the U.S. The other side of it is, you know, you'll start to see humans, private humans, going into space more and more. And right now we see that, but it's going to really pick up. And, you know, right now it's for billionaires and millionaires only, but mostly billionaires. And you'll see those price points come down. You'll start to see space stations being built in space. There are already several private companies, and I know most of them, who are doing this. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, a future version of our vehicle to take two people up, you know, at a very low cost to a space destination. But you know, I think within 30 years, you're going to start to see what Bezos really has in mind, which is turning Earth into the recreational area and turning space into the industrial area. And his idea is, you know, do as much of the manufacturing as you can in space, and you preserve Earth for living. And, you know, that might be unrealistic, but it's a nice philosophy, and I think you'll start to see that happen. I think in 20 years or less, probably closer to 10, you'll see SpaceX putting the first humans on Mars. And the most famous person that'll ever exist has not been born yet, and that's that first person that'll be born on another planet, likely Mars. And we don't know what their name is, where they come from, but that is going to be by far the most famous human being ever. And that'll probably happen, you know, in my lifetime. I hope it does. And where it goes from there, we just don't know. You know, I mean, if you like science fiction, you know, The Space Odyssey, I love that movie. That's admittedly old, but it was a great movie, and I think it's not a bad view. They just, the time frame is way off, you know, by 2001.
Because, you know, government was in the way. Sons of...
Well, that's true. You know, I talk about, in my book, I talk about...
Oh, yeah, your book. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Breaking All the Rules, and it's the inside story of the new space race, and it's how this all happened. This didn't happen in a vacuum. It didn't happen because Elon Musk showed up, you know, one day. You know, and my book's really sort of centered around the Elon Musk part of the story, but he stepped into a situation where there was many of us who were discontented with the way the government was acting as stewards of the space exploration. And Apollo, you know, was a promise that we all thought we would be on Mars by the time I was 20 years old. And, hell, we never even went back to the moon. So many of us were just plain pissed off, and we decided to steal that mantle from the government and go do it ourselves. And, you know, we were considered crazies and lunatics, and maybe we are still. But, you know, that it was that discontent and that energy that Elon stepped into with you know, with his money, and more than just his money, you know, his entrepreneurial skills and his never give up drive, you know, and then that's what made it what it is today. And there will be others that come along that fuel this, but
always,
you know, this was the spark that that created this new space revolution, and it's just beginning. And so I felt very compelled to write that book to cover what that history was and make sure that, you know, it didn't get written by somebody who was not there, because there's a lot of people that have written about that, and they all get it wrong.
Okay, wait. Where do I get this book? Can I go buy it right now?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's Kindle, hardback, paperback.
Amazon, Breaking All the Rules, right?
Yep. We've got an audio book coming. Yeah, it's probably a few months out. You can also get a signed copy on my website, jimcantrell.com, if you want to order it there.
Well, then to tell me, you mean, don't be make. All right. So where am I going to find it? Yeah, where I can get a signed copy?
At jimcantrell.com.
JimCantrell.com. All right. Let's see. About Jim. Book. Where's the book? Go about the book. There's it on Twitter. Jim. Jim. All right, man. Don't tease me. You know? Where's the book? Where do I go? Media.
Yeah, Amazon.com.
I'm going to freaking, you know, did I get a signed copy at Amazon? I'm going to communicate privately with you. We'll get it taken care of.
Yeah, I'll get you a signed copy.
Yeah. We'll work it out because I...
Just give me your mailing address.
Because I want. All right. We'll do it.
You deserve one.
Yeah. I thank you. I think so. But, you know, I was willing to pay for it because I want to get it. This is okay. Awesome. I know you got to go. You got a dinner engagement, but thanks for, you know, hanging with us and spending time with it. You know, and we talked about this, you know, before that we were going to do this about now. It's been a couple of weeks before, so I've been kind of, you know, on pins and needles, wanting to hear all kinds. So what's the big surprise that you can leave me with that, you know, you I don't know, you got a movie deal with aliens or something? I mean, you know, what's going on that, you know, nobody else knows of the company and what's happening? Come on, give me something, man.
Yeah, we're about to raise or finish raising $60 million, so that'll be news here pretty shortly, and we'll be on track to making orbit by a year from then.
Boom. Jim Cantrell, phantomspace.com. Is that where they're going to get all the update and everything? Phantomspace.com?
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. We should have a new website coming up pretty soon.
You know, Jim, thanks. Thanks for, you know, coming on and hanging with us. You know, I really appreciate, you know, you being able to, you know, kind of share with us and let us know what's up, because this is exciting times for us, and I really appreciate it. Yeah. Jim Cantrell, phantomspace.com. Peace, brother.
Thank you. Come on.
If we've learned anything from recent news, it's that unexpected things are happening. Your gut tells you there's something very wrong going on, and all the evidence suggests that there is. Government emails are hacked. There's talk of how to fight World War III, and trade of grains and food are being disrupted. Those in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing, but you know better. It's time to invest in self-reliance and emergency food storage now, more than ever. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, is the place you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunch, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save 25%, plus get free shipping on all their 3-month emergency food kits. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.